This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone with this news alert. California is on fire.
A dangerous wildfire is threatening hundreds of homes in Los Angeles near the world-famous Getty Center.
In the north, a Kincade fire, so big it looks like this. This is 85 miles away in San Francisco.
California's governor has declared a statewide emergency.
And then the placing of blame. Quick and dirty construction of homes in fire-prone areas, climate change, and of course, the electrical utility Pacific Gas and Electric.
This morning, Pacific Gas and Electric blacking out about 1.5 million people in 30 counties to prevent high winds from toppling power lines and sparking new fire.
Dion and Dan, these documents were just filed with the California Public Utilities Commission today. They outline how those two fires that happened in Lafayette could be tied again to PG&E power lines.
We've now learned that PG&E equipment may be to blame.
It's here, on the subject of blame, says writer Quinn Norton, where we lose the forest for the burning trees. As she wrote on emptywheel.net this month, when you zoom further and further out, what you begin to see is an all-encompassing crisis of technical debt.
So technical debt is a term largely used in software development when you talk about doing the quick and dirty and not really figuring out what things need to look like in the long term. The classic example of technical debt is the Y2K bug.
Mm-hmm.
The quick and dirty there was that they used two spots for the year instead of four. So when the year 2000 came up, everything was going to reset to being 1900 instead of 2000. And computers need to know what time it is. They need to know the date in order to function. So all of a sudden, they were going to time travel in the wrong direction.
And this was because they simply kicked a can of a problem they knew was going to come down the road. The sky didn't fall, but that doesn't mean there wasn't the possibility that it might.
Oh, yeah. It could have really stopped our infrastructure. But we pulled together all over the world and put in billions of dollars, millions of man hours, and largely fixed it. And things didn't fall apart. But I think people kind of think it was overblown when it wasn't. It was fixed. It was a great moment for society.
So you argue that technical debt isn't just an apt metaphor for the wildfire crisis, but really refers to a kind of global infrastructure problem.
Yes. Infrastructure is the way we engineer the world. And when we do it fast and dirty, when we do it in a way that works now without an eye towards what's going to happen in the long run, we're building up technical debt in exactly the same way we did with something like Y2K, exactly the same way we do now when we build computer systems or your phone or anything like that that just doesn't work as well as it should.
In the case of the wildfire, the infrastructure problem was that people built homes out of materials that weren't appropriate, regulations weren't followed.
Or regulations didn't exist.
What about the wide-ranging criticism of Pacific Gas and Electric? It was their lines that in some cases sparked these wildfires.
And they're getting a lot of criticism when they turn off those lines, too. I think the danger of putting everything on PG&E isn't that PG&E is particularly good at their job. They're not. But that we miss the larger point that there's a lot of moving pieces. And if you concentrate on one, you're not going to be able to fix it.
What are the moving pieces we're missing?
One of them is obviously climate change. The fire season, which has existed in California for longer than humans have existed at all, is a little longer and deeper than it was before the climate started changing. But there was a lot of resilience in the ecosystem for that fire season before we started a policy of 100 years of fire suppression. It's tough for people to kind of think, okay, we're just going to light this area on fire that's going to help thin the forests in the proper way, the way they were before humans got here. The same way, it's been really tough for people to say, we're going to cut power in order to save lives, even though cutting power threatens lives. As the mayor of Paradise said, it's kind of a no-win situation. Mm-hmm. The forests aren't correct for California. They're full of invasive species. They're stressed out by their density. There's all sorts of factors going on there that create a tinderbox in a place that's already prone to burn. And then people move into what's called the wildland-urban interface, and they probably just shouldn't be there. In the same way that we probably should stop building on floodplains, we probably mm-hmm. should stop building on places that naturally are going to burn down.
You say that all over coastal America, anyone building a small seawall is just miring in technical debt.
Yes. I don't want to say there are probably specific cases where a small seawall is called for, but in general, if people are still building on a coast that is threatened by sea level rise, unless they're building in a way that resists the ocean, which you can do, but almost nobody has done in America, then you're just going to get washed away.
So you've called California the perfect microcosm, but part of your point is that we need to zoom out. So where else are we in deep technical debt?
I would say one of the things you can look at is just the map of Louisiana. Like a third of the state isn't there anymore, because we haven't done anything to shore up that coastline, and we've continued to exploit resources in that area in a way that doesn't allow for natural resources to shore it up themselves. The trees that would lock in the land aren't there anymore. And the natural thing that happens is the Gulf of Mexico creeps in and takes over more of Louisiana. It's a very expensive job. We probably can't or don't want to save all of that land, but we aren't choosing. We're just kind of letting it happen and keeping that big old boot that we're so familiar with on our political map.
One thing I love about your use of the term technical debt is something you just alluded to. When we're saying we're deferring spending on infrastructure, it suggests that we've chosen not to act on it. But your phrase applied here, technical debt, implies that choosing not to spend on infrastructure is, in fact, in itself, a palpable action. It's actually borrowing big time. You've chosen to go into debt.
Yes. We are definitely acting through inaction here. Or in some cases, we're acting counter to what needs to happen. We aren't just deferring something. We're buying our future. We're deciding what kind of future we want to live in. We are living with the decisions in California that were made 100 years ago by people who didn't want to deal with the system they were in, or in some cases didn't understand the system they were in. I mean, much of our technical debt around the globe comes from not really understanding how the world worked. But we understand a lot more now.
Let's talk about some of that technical debt around the world. There's Jakarta, for instance. You said it's easy to drill for water there until the city sinks rather than figure out water policy. Where else do you see the bills coming due?
The slashing and burning of forests in Indonesia and Brazil. We're cutting down old growth forests without thinking about how we're going to replace the services those forests were providing. They set up the weather patterns of the world. We're not thinking about what that's going to do to rain. We're not thinking about what that's going to do to carbon or biodiversity. There is an effort right now to handle some of the technical debt that is coming from climate change along the edge of the Sahara, an area called the Sahel, mm-hmm. where they're trying to do replanting in order to kind of stop the spread of that desert and keep the land below it healthy and good for generating all sorts of exports and living services, food and water and all that. One of the reasons the Sahara is spreading is that as the planet gets warmer, deserts get bigger. We're actually pulling water out of aquifers beneath the Sahara, too, to try and maintain life in that area. It's growing that desert, and it's spreading down into this region where hundreds of millions of people live. Africa didn't release that carbon, but they're going to try and pay that down in the spot that they're in.
We've got short-term and long-term. We have levees and, closer to my home, subways falling apart.
And a seawall that needs to get built.
Roads, bridges, tunnels.
Yep.
So what are the biggest contributors to technical debt?
Short-term thinking and compartmentalized thinking. So when you're the legislature in New York State and you want some money for a thing you're looking at right now and you want to take it from the MTA, you're not really thinking about the whole system. So we need to go from a short-term niche mind frame to a systems thinking mind frame. And I think that's really difficult in contemporary politics.
And what about class and race? I was just thinking of the water in Flint, whereas the water in a different district wasn't tainted in nearly the same way.
Yeah, yeah. When we're thinking in these very narrow ways, we're going to prioritize in narrow ways. And that's why we decide these people aren't as important, putting one person ahead of another rather than saying, okay, what does a water system need to look like?
The irony is that in favoring the powerful and the wealthy, you've actually condemned
everyone. Yeah. By thinking of, like, I'm going to privilege this system above this system, you don't get the benefit of realizing there's not two systems there. There's one.
Why did you write this article?
Because I think that we really need to start framing this differently. I despair that our contemporary politics can in any way deal with the challenge that this century presents us. We tend to say, these are the things that are happening, they're discrete events, and now we have to rank how important they are. And everything about that framework is wrong. You know, Jakarta and the fires in the Amazon and the fires in California and all these different things, they are fundamentally part of the same system. They are part of the way that we have engineered our lives on this planet. Until we see that as one system, if I go back to the software metaphor, it's a guy fixing his little bit of the iPhone code who doesn't care what happens to the rest of the iPhone code. And that's how you get like a huge bug in the iOS system that's going to have to be emergency updated in a month.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of technical debt, are we heading to a place where perhaps Google or Amazon or Apple or Microsoft or Facebook, they have their own fixes, but they're proprietary? And as we increasingly rely on them, we'll have areas where things just fall apart, the center doesn't hold?
Well, I think when we talk about natural systems, you don't get more than one operating system. So when the planet says no, you can't switch to, you know, the Martian operating system.
But we'll still be able to do that in the technical world.
Yes, the technical world is a world we built. But as powerful and amazing as humanity is, it's still constrained by this planet. And that needs to be how we think about how we build stuff.
Thank you, Quinn.
Thank you very much for having me.
Quinn Norton writes for EmptyWheel.net. Her piece is titled, A World We Built to Burn.
Coming up, a toxic website runs aground, but is fighting for another chance to befoul the internet. Can it be stopped? Does it really matter?
This is On the Media.